Call to order this meeting of the House Commerce Committee. We do have a quorum. We have two sets of minutes that we're going to take a look at quickly. First, we have the minutes from our joint hearing with the Health Committee on January 30th of 2023. Representative Patizio Watoon, do you have a motion?
Mr. Chair, I would move approval of the minutes from January 30th.
Representative Patizio Watoon moves approval of the minutes from January 30th, 2023. Any discussion to the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The amendments are approved. We also have the minutes from February 13th, 2023. Representative Patizio Watoon, do you have a motion?
Mr. Chair, I would move approval of the minutes from February 13th.
Representative Patizio Watoon moves approval of the minutes from February 13th, 2023. Any discussion to the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails and the minutes are approved. We have two bills on the agenda today. First is House File 797 from Representative Tabke. This bill is returning to committee. It was previously heard and laid over to allow development of an amendment. Representative Tabke, would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move 7974 referral to the General Register.
Representative Tabke moves House File 797 be recommended be placed on the General Register. And you do have the A1 amendment. Would you like to move the A1 amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes.
Representative Tabke moves the A1 amendment. And this is the only thing that's new and the only thing that we're going to allow any public testimony to today is the content of this specific amendment. Representative Tabke, would you describe the A1 amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So this we heard this bill previously, and so this amendment, what it does, it gives added clarification to the goals that we're trying to reach here and make sure that we don't have any issues coming up into the future with things and that the bill works as we intend to. So it adds clarification if no time guide exists for warranty work, that it will that how the process works for that, so that it must be charged at non-warranty rates. And then the second piece of that is it all to clarify the fact that it includes communicating with manufacturers for technical assistance or external manufacturer source to provide warranty repair so that that is included and what folks can get paid for.
Thank you, Representative Tabke. We did have one person sign up to testify as to the amendment language. That person is Josh Fisher from the Alliance for Automotive Innovation. Mr. Fisher, you want to come forward, state your name for the record, and proceed to your testimony.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Josh Fisher here on behalf of the Alliance for Automotive Innovation. We are a trade association representing the auto manufacturers and want to provide a few short comments to the amendment. From our perspective, the first part of this amendment on actual time does not address our concerns with the underlying bill and, in fact, highlights that the bill is not about compensating technicians for the amount of time spent on repairs because it uses third-party time guides for some repairs and actual time for others. The first part of the amendment also creates two conflicting standards, actual time and a time not less than that charged to retail customers for similar work. And from our perspective, our members just don't have visibility into that time because that's on the dealer side. We just don't know what that is. So it's unknowable for our members, which creates a challenge. And then finally, on the second part of the amendment, we object to this because it does not take into account whether the communication was necessary, whether the delays were attributable to the dealer, not the manufacturer. Frankly, it's just too vague of a standard, and we would like to see some of that changed. I will say we're working on some language for the proponents of this bill, and we'll get that to them. I understand that the bill is likely to move today, but we just wanted to provide these comments on the amendment. So thank you for your time.
Thank you. That was the only person who signed up to testify. Are there any members of the public wishing to testify to the bill? You can step down, Mr. Fisher. Thank you. Seeing none, we'll move to discussion to the amendment. Discussion to the amendment. Representative Dowd.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I guess I'm going to break your rule and ask a question that doesn't relate to the amendment, but it's just a general question about the bill itself.
That's fine.
Is somebody, I guess for the bill author, are you guys kind of very often in the legislature on issues like this that can be controversial, that there are two sides that kind of trying to work out it? Is somebody getting them in a room and negotiating something or hopefully trying to get some agreement? And it's always better for legislators when we can get two outside parties to agree with each other and we can pass somebody that everybody supports. Is that happening?
Representative Tabke.
Chair Stevenson and Representative Dowd, yes, that has been happening. There have been relatively non-productive conversations thus far, and so that's why we are moving this forward, is to make sure that people know that this is serious and this is going to get done, and we want it to make it the best bill possible, and so we'll have another bite at it in the future.
Okay. Representative Dow?
Yeah, thanks. I'll come and meet with you on this offline. Yeah, thanks.
Sounds great. Thank you.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Tapke, in the amendment, it talks about if no time guide exists. And sorry if I somehow missed this when we heard the main bill, but is it within the auto manufacturer's purview to actually create that time guide if there isn't one? Or how would that happen?
Thank you, Chair Stevens. So the way this will work is there are the third-party time guides is what we are recommending that they get paid utilizing, and so that's what this bill will do is move that piece forward. What the amendment is clarifying is that if that for some reason doesn't exist or it's a different kind of thing, that is how people will get paid.
All right. Any further discussion to the amendment? Seeing none, all in favor of the A1 amendment say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails and the A1 amendment is adopted. Discussion to the bill. I know we just had some discussion to the bill, but are there any further members wishing to speak to the bill? Seeing none, Representative Tabke, final comments.
Nope. Thank you very much, everyone, for giving us some time to get this put together, and I look forward to it moving forward. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Tabke, who renews his motion that House File 797, as amended, be recommended to be placed on the General Register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails, and House File 797, as amended, is recommended to be placed on the General Register.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Only have... Okay, the only other item on our agenda is House File 1337. Representative Fisher, the author, is not here yet. He had another committee he had to be in at the beginning of the hearing. Instead of going to recess, I propose that we start taking public testimony, and then when Representative Fisher comes back, he can have his opening remarks. Is that a...
Yeah, I don't have a problem with that as long as it can be just a quick setup of the bill so that members know what we're talking about.
Sure.
Just a very quick overview, which I'm sure you could provide, Mr. Chair.
All right. Well, I will just say I will let Representative Fisher describe his bill in greater detail, but this is the fair repair bill that provides for people ability to repair their own equipment and get the parts they need from the manufacturer and so on. We will move and take some public testimony on the bill until Representative Fisher arrives, at which point we'll allow him to make a more traditional opening statement. The first testifier we have is Lynn Hoffman from Eureka Cycling. Please come forward, state your name for the record, and proceed your testimony. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Stevenson, members of the committee, Representative Fisher, for who's not here, I'll thank him later, for leadership on this issue. My name is Lynn Hoffman. I'm one of the co-presidents at Eureka Recycling, based in Minneapolis. We're a nonprofit social enterprise recycler. We have a mission to demonstrate that waste is preventable. We employ 130 people with living wage jobs who collect, sort, and market 110,000 tons of residential recyclables every year. Our team sorts these recyclables into 15 different commodities, and we feed those back into the supply chain, supporting our local and regional economy. About 80% of our feedstock stays in Minnesota, about 90% in the greater Midwest when it's made into new products. Operationally, we have firsthand experience with the barriers created when we cannot fix our own equipment. Most often, like forklifts, loaders, skid steers, when there are really simple repairs that are needed, like replacing a joystick or a fuel filter, we need to wait sometimes up to 2 weeks for a tech to come out just to plug their laptop in so we can get into the machine. Or in some cases, the tech is required to use really special diagnostic equipment to identify what we know is a very simple and what should be inexpensive fix. We have really, really awesome mechanics on our team. This not only creates additional cost, obviously, for our program, which is then passed on to the residents, but of course impacts our productivity. As a zero waste organization, we also see an even greater systems change need for this legislation. Manufacturers have made it difficult to repair personal and professional equipment, and replacing it, as we all know, is often easier and less expensive solution for consumers. This cycle creates two major environmental impacts. First, it significantly increases the need to mine precious raw metals needed for producing electronics using energy-intensive and polluting technologies. And then second, of course, discarded electronics create large quantities of waste. And it's not just any waste. If this is not disposed of properly, which it often isn't, toxics from the e-waste enter our soil and water, creating concerns about water pollution, soil pollution, human health, and more. Right to Repair will make it easier for Minnesotans to fix their own equipment, reduce our reliance on the resource-intensive production process, and cut down on problematic electronic waste. And we ask for your support on this bill. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Mm-hmm. See, Representative Fisher is arrived, so we will revert to the normal order of things here. I will move that House File 1337 be recommended to be referred to the Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Committee. I also see that you have the A1 amendment, Representative Fisher. I will move the A1 amendment. Could you briefly describe the A1 amendment?
Thank you, Chair Stevenson and committee. The A1 amendment is to make it very clear that this bill is to make sure that people have a right to repair their equipment or to have their equipment repaired, but not to modify. And this is something that was based on testimony and concerns that people have brought up in past when we've had this bill heard.
Thank you, Representative Fisher. Any discussion to the A1 amendment? Representative Niska.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Fisher, I guess my question is
Representative
how does...
Niska, I think your mic isn't working. If you could try and use a different microphone, maybe.
Maybe this one works better.
There we go.
I'm curious as to how this amendment works in the real world and how a manufacturer or authorized repair provider distinguishes between the tools and or documentation that's would either repair or modify. How is it going to work in the real world in terms of being able to withhold those things for the purpose, or, you know, maybe an unknown purpose that someone is trying to use those things for?
Thank you, Chair Stevenson. I think it's very easy is from the or a simple aspect when you've got a part that replaces on that breaks on your phone, or your printer or your computer, and you need to have it replaced. It's real easy to say, okay, that part's coming over. It's going to do that particular purpose. Same with the documentation. Documentation of how to put your part in doesn't tell you how to modify it. It's the same principle that we use with automobiles. Automobiles have the same provision out there is where they have to make their parts, the tools for diagnosis, and documentation available. And we don't see people taking that same information and going around modifying their cars in ways that are not appropriate.
Representative Niska.
Thank you. I don't have any other questions about this, I guess. I suspect that we're going to hear from those on the ground that this doesn't really provide any tools for them to stop the modification problems that they're raising, but I'll leave it there for now. Okay. Thanks.
Any further discussion to the A1 amendment? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails and the A1 amendment is adopted. Representative Fisher? You've described your bill a little bit, but I'll give you more of an opportunity to describe it.
Thank you very much. I appreciate Chair Stevenson and committee appreciate the opportunity to present the Right to Repair bill. This is a bill that has changed over time. That as we've listened to different testimony in different committees, the amendment I have here is one example. And basically what the purpose of this legislation is fourfold, is to give consumers the choice, especially in greater Minnesota, on where to bring their electronic products when they require repair, or making sure that they're able to get their farm equipment repaired when it breaks down in terms of planting season or harvest season when timeline is really tough. It helps support and grow our Minnesota tech jobs. It helps guarantee free market access because when you have people who are assigned as authorized dealers only, they can get down to the point where they can have only one or two in the entire state, thereby preventing services elsewhere. And this also helps reduce the amount of growing e-waste that is harming our environment. Going to the last point I made is if people find out that they have to travel from northwest Minnesota down to the cities to get, you know, a 4 to 5 hour trip to get an item repaired, most likely they're going to turn around and buy a new item, and then we've added to the e-waste that is happening out there. It was, you know, this one of the other things that we've changed is
based on testimony over the last couple of years, dealers have brought attention to us on wording around what is fair and reasonable that would make it tough for dealers to continue to make money and provide the services that they do out there. And so that section was redone to help address those concerns out there. While we asked for language to help have people involved, we never heard from anybody at that point in time. And so we did our best to put together language to address those issues out there. I'd like to remind the committee is it wasn't long ago that when you had a product of a computer, a printer, a piece of a farm equipment and broke down, it was relatively easy to find people who could repair it or to do the repairs yourself. Today, it's in many instances, it's almost impossible for that to occur. I had the instance last year where I had a printer of mine that broke down. I could only find one place in the Twin Cities that was an authorized dealer that had the parts to repair it, and they had a two-week backup. And this was right before session started. It was remote. I needed that printer. And so as a result, that became part of the e-waste out there because I could not find somebody else or find the parts myself because I went online, and it was an issue that you had to get it from the manufacturer, and the manufacturer would only do it from the authorized dealer. And this is part of the problem that we have out there that we're trying to address. Yet, one of the things I'd like to make people remember is that this is just to repair your equipment out there that we have. This is something that is, the bill is structured in such a way is that it will model what is happening in the auto world. Right now in the automobile world, you can take your car almost anywhere or get the tools, the diagnostic equipment to fix it when you have a problem. Remember how complicated cars are. Is I've got a vehicle that when I get into it and I'm on the highway, I can push a button and it starts turning when the lanes turn. It slows down when the car in front of me slows down. It has complicated pollution control equipment, but yet we haven't heard of any of the things that are done in the automobile world causing cars to blow up or crash into somebody else. And that's what this bill does. This bill replicates that opportunity to be able to do that everywhere else. And so I just want people to keep that in mind as a grounding point, is that if we're able to do it for cars, why can't we do it for other consumer products that we have out there? Basically, the bill's just requiring the original manufacturers to make available instructions, parts, and tools to independent repair business and consumers to fix their equipment. It does not force trade secrets to be revealed. No computer source code is revealed. Data privacy is protected. Liability of the manufacturer is protected. It will allow independent businesses or individuals to simply do something as replace the batteries in their phones, or the farmers to be able to move quickly to get their equipment repaired at the critical points when they're trying to do harvesting or planting. The bottom line comes down to is the world did not end when this was done in the automobile world. It's not going to end when we make this happen here. I will stop my testimony at this point. Thank you for the opportunity for the consideration. Allow the testifiers to continue.
Thank you, Representative Fisher. We do have a number of additional public testifiers who signed up to testify. I think I didn't say this before the first testifier, but we're asking testifiers to keep their remarks confined to 2 minutes. Mr. Brown here to my right will be keeping track of time, and if you go too far past 2 minutes, I will probably ask you to conclude your remarks. Our next testifier is Tim Veld. And after that will be Chris Olson. Let's come forward, state your name for the record, proceed to your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Stevenson, committee members. My name is Tim Veldy. I'm a fourth generation farmer in Yellow Medicine County, western Minnesota, between the little towns of Hanley Falls and Granite Falls. Farming has changed over the years. I've been at it for quite a while, and particularly in our equipment. In this day and age, a combine or a tractor can have several hundred computer chips in it and sensors, and if one of those should go bad or something is detected on your machine, it can send the machine into what's called limp mode. And what that means is as you're going down the field, all of a sudden the engine idles down to simply an idle, and you have to slowly creep your way back to the end of the field, try to find a technician to come out and diagnose what the problem is. The right to repair bill that we're looking at would allow independent dealers and farmers to get the tools, materials, and diagnostic equipment necessary to make repairs. And I don't in any way wish to denigrate dealers. Dealers do a valuable service to agriculture and to our communities, but competition is a good thing. If we could allow some competition Small independent repair shops could start up again. They have pretty much disappeared in rural Minnesota simply because they do not have the technology available to do these repairs other than from a dealer. I have a grandson right now who is going to school to be a diesel technician on ag equipment. His plan and my plan, hope, is that he can come home and work his way into farming by having a small repair shop out on the farm. This would only be available if he was allowed to have the access to the equipment and technology to diagnose and fix equipment. It would allow him to become an entrepreneur like many other young people would like to do and start some repair businesses back in rural Minnesota. Briefly, I would like to say that I know there are some opponents to this bill, and their fear is that farmers will want to modify their equipment. Farmers are simply looking for a way to repair their equipment or have a small shop repair it, not modify the equipment. The legislation also has the subdivision 2F has been inserted so that it would allow dealerships to make a fair margin, not sell things simply at cost or anything. We realize everybody needs to make a margin, and or they won't stay in business, and we need them all to be in business. The Minnesota National Farm Bureau recently announced that they'd made a memorandum of understanding with John Deere. This memorandum of understanding is not a substitute for legislation. It has no enforcement. John Deere could terminate this at any time, and it simply makes a promise for an agreement, but does not have any mechanism to hold it in place. House File 1337 will create a fair and open market to repair farm equipment for not only for those of us in farming right now, but for generations to come, and allow technicians to start small businesses in the rural communities and have so we can have access closer to home to do these repairs. Thank you for your time, and if anyone should have questions, I'd be more than happy to answer them.
Thank you. Next we have Chris Olson, who will be followed by Mark Blacksill. Mr. Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Good afternoon. My name is Chris Olson, and I am the repair and reuse manager at Repowered, formerly known as Tech Dump. Repowered is a nonprofit electronics recycler and refurbisher in the Twin Cities. We provide fair chances for people, the planet, and technology. At Repowered, we prioritize our environmental mission of reducing e-waste and our social mission through a deeply held belief that every person has value. Through our work readiness program, we provide opportunities for community members facing barriers to employment, such as experience with incarceration. An important piece of our organizational model at Repowered is refurbishing electronics. By repairing and reselling electronics, we reduce the flow of electronic waste. We provide job training through our 18-month work readiness program, and we help to bridge the digital divide in our community. Through online sales and our two retail store locations, we provide access to high-quality, affordable, refurbished electronics such as phones, tablets, and laptops. Over the past decade, Repowered has collected over 40 million pounds of electronics for recycling. However, due in part to manufacturer restrictions on our access to proper documentation, replacement parts, software, and other specialized tools, we are simply unable to refurbish a considerable volume of those items. With newer devices, it is becoming even more common for us to encounter these barriers to repair, which prohibits our skilled team from refurbishing a perfectly good phone or laptop. In fact, we are currently only able to refurbish around 10% of the electronics that we receive. HR 1337 would enable Repowered to increase the amount of material that we can refurbish, thusly supporting our mission of reducing electronic waste. This bill would allow us to create more jobs and make an even bigger impact in our community and for our planet. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Our next testifier is Mark Blacksill, who will be followed by Tammy Gillard. Pardon me. Please come forward, state your name for the record, proceed to your testimony.
Thanks to the committee for the opportunity to testify on the digital right to repair. My name is Mark Blaxel. I'm the CFO of Vibrant Technologies. Vibrant is a Minnesota company formed in 1998 by Jennifer and David Larson, two U of M graduates. We buy and sell used servers, storage, and networking hardware. Our CEO, Jennifer Larson, has been an advocate for the right to repair since 2014. She can't be here today, but wants to thank the committee for considering this legislation. If there was ever an issue that had bipartisan written all over it, the Digital Fair Repair Act is it. It's good for consumers. It's good for businesses, both large and small. It's good for the environment. It's good for innovation in the Minnesota economy. It's good policy, too, and the great thing is it doesn't cost taxpayers anything to implement. It should pass unopposed. The right to repair lies at the core of our business at Vibrant. We buy used equipment from data centers, bring it in, test it, break machines down, build them back up, and resell them. We provide data centers with high-quality hardware at a fraction of the cost and carbon footprint it takes to make the new stuff. We employ 60 people in our 75,000-square-foot Eden Prairie facility and ship to customers all over the world. Every single day, we face obstacles to open competition the OEMs place in our way, updating firmware, testing components, rebuilding machines, and working with third-party maintenance providers to keep the gear running once it's on site. If this is such a great idea, why would anyone be opposed to it? Well, that's pretty simple. It would take power away from a handful of large companies that would rather dictate how their aftermarkets work than permit open competition. Honestly, they should know better because supporting the digital right to repair would be good for them in the long run, but when you have the ability to exercise market power for short-term gain, that's hard to resist, and so that's what they do. They restrict the availability of firmware, those small little bits of embedded code that allow computer components just to operate together, and they claim full copyright protections to make these bits the moral equivalent of the Harry Potter series. They add security locks to make it hard for legitimate owners of used equipment to gain access to drives and other key components. And they promote fear, uncertainty, and doubt in the market by demanding opaque, lengthy, onerous licensing agreements in which they claim rights to do pretty much whatever they want. They scare people into buying their newest models and using equipment only in ways that benefit them.
Mr. Blaxel, if you could wrap up.
I'll wrap it up.
Thank you.
If you've ever struggled to find a convenient way to repair a cracked screen or been forced to buy a new phone or because your apps won't work, you know firsthand what large OEMs do to limit competition. What's true for computers is also true in data centers. That's why this bill is so important. I'm proud of what we do at Vibrant, but we're not alone in Minnesota. There's a long-standing ecosystem here of refurbished equipment providers, dozens of companies providing thousands of jobs and powering countless petabytes of processing power. We all stand together in support of the Digital Fair Repair Act. It's an idea whose time has come. Thank you.
Thanks. Next, we have Tammy Gillard, who will be followed by Brian Martinson. Please come forward, state your name for the record, and proceed to your testimony. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Stevenson and members of the committee. My name is Tamara Gillard. I am the Executive Director for Minnesota Tech for Success, formerly Minnesota Computers for Schools. Tech for Success is a nonprofit organization now in its 26th year. Our mission is to create digital equity for students by partnering with schools, educational organizations to provide technology access, engaging STEM programming and IT workforce development in underserved communities. Minnesota Tech for Success recycles, refurbishes, and repairs donated computer technology, which is placed in schools and nonprofits in Minnesota. Since our founding in 1997, we have placed over 100,000 computers in Minnesota, creating digital equity for students across the state by increasing that access to technology. And we also provide IT certification training for individuals, most from underrepresented populations, who are preparing for entry-level employment in the IT field. We also offer opportunities to our graduates for paid internships to gain that hands-on skills refurbishing computer equipment, better preparing them for the workforce. We have worked with 24 school districts, over 135 schools and nonprofit organizations, and hundreds of students across the state of Minnesota, especially during the times when they've needed to handle their academics through remote learning. We have served schools from border to border, Ada, Winona, Cass Lake, Red Lake, Crookston, Two Harbors, Thief River Falls, Bemidji, Warren, Forest Lake, Faribault, Gaylord, Grand Meadow, Landsborough, Mayor, Canby, and Springfield. I am here today in support of House File 1337. It's extremely important that we have necessary parts and access to manuals to refurbish this equipment for our schools and our students in Minnesota. Last year, we placed over 5,000 computers across the state, providing low-cost technology solutions for schools whose budgets are already strapped and with students for distance learning. The ability to repair also provides much-needed workforce training. We work with all-size companies taking computer equipment from small to large, city, county, state organizations, which means we process and refurbish all different types of equipment. And it's continually changing. For us to provide good quality computer technology for our schools and students, we need to make sure that we have access to parts and tools to do so. One example I can give you is sometimes our donors provide us with equipment and it doesn't come with a hard drive. We need to go out and find the appropriate hard drive caddies and screws. We need access to that. Otherwise, this computer equipment is going to be recycled and disposed of when it has good life to it and could
Ms. Gillard,
be.
Ms. if you could please wrap up your testimony. I apologize.
It's critical for us to have this right and ability to repair computer equipment. Please support House File 1337 so that we can provide quality computer technology for our students and digital equity for all. I have provided a letter of support. You'll see in there that I have testimony from a few of our schools for the importance for this technology. Thank you all for your time.
Thank you. Next, we have Brian Martinson, who will be followed by Andrew O'Connor. Martinson, please come forward, state your name for the record, and proceed to your testimony. Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Brian Martinson. I am a policy analyst with the Association of Minnesota Counties. I also serve as government relations staff for the Solid Waste Administrators Association, or SWA, which is an affiliate of AMC. SWA represents the people, the professionals across the state that are responsible for managing solid waste for all Minnesota counties and waste management districts, as directed by the 1997 Waste Management Act, or Chapter 115A. Under that act, the state also established a waste management hierarchy. Atop of that list are waste reduction and reuse as preferred outcomes for products at end of intended life. In the decades following the establishment of this act, counties put great effort and resources towards managing the vast amounts of waste already being generated. But today, our disposal systems are more well established, as well as diversion opportunities, and we're able to turn more attention towards prioritizing reduction and reuse. SWA supports the Digital Fair Repair Bill as our members manage electronic waste through collection, dismantling, and transportation to recyclers for further processing. In most cases, these costs are borne by the local county taxpayers or placed on fees on consumers at the time of delivery. We know that the very best way to manage waste is to prevent it from being created. This bill will allow owners of electronics to repair those devices or salvage parts for repair of other devices. Allowing Minnesota's the ability to repair electronic devices will reduce the amount of waste coming in the door and prevent recycling and disposal costs from being incurred. Repairing and reusing more products is an important step on the road to reducing the expense of waste management. Our membership across the state support this legislation, and particularly in rural Minnesota, where county budgets are small in comparison to those in the metro area. We thank you for your consideration of House File 1337.
Thank you. Next, we have Andrew O'Connor, who will be followed by Tyler Deers. Please come forward, state your name for the record, and proceed to your testimony. Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Chair Stevenson and members of the committee for allowing me to testify today. My name is Andrew O'Connor. I'm here on behalf of the Entertainment Software Association, respectfully opposing House File 1337. ESA represents video game console makers and game publishers. I've submitted written testimony. I'll take my time today to just hit on a few key issues for our industry. The first is copyright protections. This bill fails to adequately protect copyrights. The trademark itself is more protecting the console, but the copyright is for the copyrighted works that the games that are played on that. So think of all your popular titles as are all copyright protected. When you buy a game, you own the physical game to play it, but you do not own the underlying copyright for that story, that work of art. Second, I'll touch on the technological protection measures, TPMs for short. TPMs are digital locks that are included within the console that are meant to protect the console itself as well as the games that are played and ensure that they are secure. The portions of this bill would force the keys to this lock to be given out as part of repair, thus leaving the console and the games played susceptible to piracy. We're already dealing with very sophisticated pirate attacks almost daily on our games. We need to keep these as secure as possible. And also, the consumer experience at the end of the day, it matters that your game console works and that it works and plays the games effectively. All our member companies are committed to fast, efficient, secure, and affordable repairs. They want to get your console back to you because it's only good if you're playing it. I'll also touch on environmental issues as it relates to consoles. There's a robust secondhand market for older generation consoles. I talk all the time. My most valuable possession is still my old Xbox that I will refuse to let my mom throw out. And if you decide that it is time to part ways for your console to get rid of it, all our companies offer recycling programs and retail shops do as well. I know GameStop has a very easy and accessible recycling program. So, I submitted written testimony. Please oppose this bill. I'm happy to answer any questions that may come up.
Thank you. Next, we have Tyler Deers, who will be followed by David Fish. Come forward, state your name for the record, proceed to your testimony. Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Tyler Deers with TechNet. We are a technology trade association representing over 100 of the most innovative companies on the planet, and we are in opposition to House File 1337. I just want to start off by kind of highlighting how the issue of digital repair has evolved significantly over the last decade. Consumers currently have a variety of professional repair options, including independent repair providers, or utilizing the manufacturer's authorized repair network. There are repair services that will come to your home, will come to your office to repair your device, and there are repair services that allow you to mail in your device at your convenience. There are even repair options for individuals and hobbyists that seek to self-repair on their own. I highlight this because when this issue first came about a little over 10 years ago, many of these options did not exist. And I just wanted to highlight that because this may be just more of a philosophical concern, but I feel that the conversation fails to acknowledge that some of the voluntary changes that industry has made on this issue. And by the way, if a consumer still wants to take their device to an unaffiliated or unvetted third-party repair shop, there's nothing preventing them from doing so. They own the device and can choose to have it serviced when and where they would like. But what this legislation would do is it eliminates the security and privacy protections that manufacturers put in place that benefit the consumers that our members serve. By establishing contractual relationships with authorized repair providers, manufacturers can ensure that the technicians receive the appropriate training and have the relevant qualifications so that repairs are done properly and safely. Just consider for a second the amount of personal data and information that is stored on our phones and computers. There was a recent study that just came out that found privacy violations occur far too often when consumers seek computer or phone repairs, with female consumers bearing the brunt of these privacy violations. According to the study, half of the commercial shops studied found that personal data was not only accessed at these repair shops, but were also copied to technicians' own devices. Now, sure, you can say this could happen and occur in an authorized repair setting as well, but there would be recourse For example, that authorized repair shop could lose their license or their authorized repair status. However, if an unauthorized repair shop were to do this, under this bill, it is unclear if the OEMs would still be forced to provide the mandated requirements this bill would authorize. Basically, the state is enabling a new independent repair industry without any specific protections or controls in place. In closing, we appreciate the opportunity to appear for you today, and for the reasons stated in my testimony, we ask you to please not advance this bill at this time. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have David Fish, who will be followed by J.R. Burke. Please come forward, state your name for the record, proceed to your testimony. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. I'm David Fish with the Minnesota Electronic Security and Technology Association, for most of you simply known as the alarm industry. We, in 2003 and 2007, became licensed by the state of Minnesota under 326B.33. That statute sets out requirements for anybody that works in the life safety, fire alarm business, technology systems business, and so forth. As such, the problem that we have here is that makes the way this bill is laid out makes it possible for unlicensed people to work in our business, and that conflicts one law with the other, and that's not a good thing. Now, I've sent written testimony to the committee, and I'm happy to meet anybody and ask questions, but I'm happy to get you a copy of 326. But what we're looking for is an exemption has already been made in the law for the medical devices industry, for the alarm industry, so to clear up this conundrum between one law and another. And so I thank you for hearing me out, and if you have questions, I'll be around if anyone wants to ask or see me later. Mr. Chairman, thank you.
Thank you. Our next testifier is J.R. Burke. We followed by Matthew Larsgaard. Please come forward, state your name for the record, proceed to your testimony. Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is J.R. Burke. I'm with Polaris Industries. For those of you who don't know us, Polaris has a long and deep history in Minnesota. About 70 years ago, Polaris started as an independently owned small business. Three individuals came up with an idea for a better mousetrap, as you will. And that business has grown into a Fortune 500 company based here in Minnesota that employs thousands of people, has hundreds of suppliers that we spend twofold what we spend anywhere else in the world. With small and medium-sized manufacturers, we have 50 dealers across the states, some in your districts. House File 1337 by Representative Fisher, we want to certainly thank you for your thoughtfulness and collaborating with some of the amendments. We've also been lucky to have some conversations about further amendments down the road. But let me just point out a few things. The laudable goals that Representative Fisher talked about with reducing e-waste and providing more choice with repairs and the like are important, but they also need to be balanced against consumer safety, one of the big concerns that Polaris has. As was mentioned with the motor vehicle exclusion, which we think strikes that balance, but why it strikes that balance? As Representative Fisher talked about, it provides, today, the market allows for repairs to be done when they're brought to the authorized dealer and independent repair shops across our state. But also acknowledge that when you walk in the door, there's a sticker on that door that says ASE, the National Institute for Automotive Service Excellence, which is widely adopted and acknowledged as a competency standard for both authorized dealers and independent repair shops across the country. That gives consumers confidence that their increasingly complex product, which is governed by state and federal safety and emissions regulations, is going to be repaired properly when they show up to pick it up. Likewise, Polaris's products are also subject to exhaustive state and federal safety and environmental standards. Yet products like ours are not excluded in this bill. Members, thousands of products would be covered under this bill, many of which are in your home. whether it's a household product like a microwave, a refrigerator, a consumer electronic, and then go out into our industry. Skid steers, forestry equipment, construction equipment, and the like. What this bill would do would essentially codify that by virtue of having access to the diagnostic and repair tools for those products, you are equally competent to repair your microwave or your refrigerator as you are a skid steer if you owned one, and that you would do it safely for yourself and future owners. That just does not, to Polaris at this point, seem logical. The final point I'd make is we are not breaking new ground here. There is a digital repair law on the books in New York State, which does provide additional exclusions, which Polaris would advocate on behalf of, and also provides additional guidance for how the relationship between manufacturers who would be required to distribute this information and those who receive that information, how that relationship would work. Many of those provisions are not currently in this bill. I certainly look forward to the opportunity to continue the conversation with Representative Fisher and other members as we continue to refine this bill. But as we sit today, Polaris would oppose the bill as written and certainly request an opportunity to continue to work on this bill throughout this process. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you. Our last testifier is Matthew Larsgaard. Last person we signed up anyway. Come forward, state your name for the record, proceed your testimony, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Matthew Larsgaard and I am appearing in opposition to House File 1337 on behalf of the Pioneer Equipment Dealers Association, which represents approximately 150 of Minnesota's farm equipment dealerships. Our dealers sell, service, and repair tractors, combines, and other farm equipment. We have stores in small, rural communities across Minnesota. We have several concerns regarding this bill. House File 1337 requires manufacturers to provide all service and repair parts to equipment owners and independent repair providers at costs, I quote, costs that are fair to both parties, considering the agreed upon conditions, promised quality, and timeliness of delivery, end quote. This language is very ambiguous and completely open to interpretation. The agreed upon conditions and promised quality language is puzzling as the bill does not require a manufacturer to agree to anything or to make promises to anyone. Furthermore, why is parts pricing even being contemplated? We have never heard that parts pricing has ever been an issue. Quite the opposite, in fact. Parts are typically widely available in a highly competitive market. In Minnesota alone, we have 150 dealers competing for business, not to mention the hundreds of other dealers around the nation that sell parts into Minnesota through e-commerce. Furthermore, common repair parts are also available through online retailers such as Amazon and local shops like NAPA and others. With respect to documentation, this bill requires manufacturers to provide, I quote, manuals, diagrams, reporting outputs, service code descriptions, schematic diagrams, and other similar information, end quote, to equipment owners and independents at no charge for free. This language is very unfair, as our dealers pay an annual subscription fee for access to an electronic portal that provides many of these items. We believe it is completely unfair that our dealers pay for these items and the owners and independents would get them for free. Furthermore, this bill requires manufacturers to provide, I quote, tools, software, and documentation, end quote, at, quote, costs that are equivalent to the lowest actual cost for which the manufacturer offers the tool, software, or documentation to an authorized repair provider, end quote. We have several concerns with this language, including what would be defined as a tool or software. Again, we do not believe it is reasonable to require a manufacturer to provide tools, software, and documentation to the public at dealer cost or wholesale. This concept is exactly the same as the government forcing a sawmill to bypass Lowe's and sell lumber directly to home builders at the same price Lowe's would have paid. Again, unfair pricing is not a problem. Why is this legislation requiring these items to be sold at dealer cost? There's no question that owners have the right to repair their equipment. Not only do they have that right, we strongly agree with and support their ability to perform repairs themselves. Several years ago, our industry wasn't there. We are today. Over the last couple of years, our industry was informed that farmers wanted more access to resources, and we have responded. We're there today. Contrary to what has been promoted in the public sector, farmers currently have access to the repair sources they need to perform the vast majority of equipment repairs. In fact, many dealerships and manufacturers provide all of these resources to the general public. As farm equipment continues to become more sophisticated, we will continue to actively work in support of our industry's commitment to continue to make available the tools and information equipment owners and independents need to repair their equipment. In conclusion, Mr. Chairman, manufacturers and dealers currently make available almost all of the repair resources farmers and independents need to conduct repairs. Thus, this legislation is wholly unnecessary for farm equipment if the goal is simply to gain access to the information and tools necessary to repair equipment. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. There's no other people who signed up to testify. Are there any members of the public wishing to testify as to this bill? Please come forward, state your name for the record, proceed your testimony. Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, a member of the committee. My name is Steve McMahon. I'm a field service power generation area manager for Cummins, based out of our sales and service branch in White Bear Lake, Minnesota. On behalf of Cummins and our almost 2,000 employees in the state, I rise in opposition to the House File 1337. Cummins is a global heavy-duty powertrain manufacturer producing products in on-highway, off-highway, and power generation markets. While the bill excludes on-highway motor vehicles, we believe the language should be expanded to also exempt all categories of non-road stationary equipment. As drafted, the bill includes non-road and off-highway engines included in farm equipment, construction equipment, locomotives, marine vessels, and stationary generators. This bill would pose a serious safety, security, and environmental risk to Minnesotans. Cummins engines are designed to meet the latest emissions and safety regulations, which are set by federal and state law. The engines are controlled by sophisticated computer software and proprietary software to ensure that the products perform in the the manner they were designed and the emissions meet the mandated guidelines. Unfortunately, there are vendors in the market that attempt to sell products to reprogram our emissions and safety controls to change the way the engines perform today. These alterations are in direct violation of the Federal Clean Air Act, and the vendors and consumers are liable for fines and penalties. The modifications also create liability issues for manufacturers such as Cummins, who remain responsible for safe and efficient operation of our products. We do not believe the proprietary software developed specifically for the safe operation of equipment that meets strict government regulations should be tampered with. Cummins is not against the right to repair, and we provide customers with digital repair manuals, standard troubleshooting trees, and updates available via Cummins.com, as well as guidance subscriptions with digital troubleshooting. We do not believe that the individuals have the right to tamper, though, which is why we oppose House File 1337. Thank you for the opportunity to voice our concerns.
Thank you. Any other members of the public wishing to testify? Seeing none, we'll move to member discussion and questions. Discussion to the bill. Representative Perryman.
Thank you, Chair. I want to preface it that this is not a commercial, but food for thought as the bill goes through the system. My real life is I own some Batteries Plus bulb stores where we do a lot of device repair. So this is really just food for thought as this continues through, Representative, and that I'm in a unique situation with Batteries Plus. We do repair lots of devices, and the reason I say I'm in a unique situation is I am certified. So right now I am certified with Samsung. Our company is waiting to be certified by Apple. But to get certified, I have to spend a ton of money on consumer safety, loaner phones, manpower, tools, skills, computer systems, manuals, we recycle. We do a lot of things that cost money to make sure that we do it right because we are under contract from these companies. So I just wanted to present that that I represent many products and services with these contracts, and I don't want to compromise my business, compromise my workforce, my guys. I want to always do the right thing. And so I've chosen to put into my company to be certified, and I feel very confident that we do the right thing because of that. And so this bill, I'm a little concerned how it can open up to others, because we do get phones in from other phone repairers, and the poor customer will say, can you fix this? We'll open it, and it'll look like, whoa, what happened in here? And they do admit, I went to so-and-so, to get it repaired, and now we're fixing the problem. I'm open to competition, believe me, but I'm also interested in keeping a great contract and partnership with companies that have asked me to invest. And the other thing is we have security. We are able to open phones and do things with phones that we have them sign a sheet that says we are certified and we do not share your passwords, we do not share photos or anything of that nature. And the other thing I'm very proud of is we are local. I'm not a big company by no means. I'm just a small retailer that likes to work in my own community and do these kind of services and products. So end of the day, my big bold point is just to listen to someone that I believe I'm doing it right just through certification and paying for it, and that that you can respect how I feel when there's other companies out there that they're here today and gone tomorrow, and they may not be the entrusted one with security and information that people have on their cell phones. So that's all I'm bringing up today, and hopefully it brings some awe and shock, maybe, I don't know, and you learned a little bit about Representative Perryman, that I am a business owner with Batteries Plus, and I can get you deals, so. That was my commercial. I apologize. I just can't stop myself. So thank you for listening to my side.
Thank you, Representative Perryman. Any other discussion to the bill? Representative Niska.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Fisher, I wanted to start, I guess, by asking for your reaction to some of the quality concerns that I think Representative Perryman is hinting at, but also the testifiers from Polaris and Cummins, and in particular, the reference to construction equipment being included is very concerning to me. If there's a potential quality concern, I think about a swing excavator on the on a busy freeway that breaks down because it was repaired by someone who maybe doesn't have the right quality controls in place. And just curious to hear your response to those kind of concerns, and what does this do to help make sure that doesn't happen? Thanks.
Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Chair Stevenson. Thank you, Representative Niska, for that question. I think the important thing that we want to take a look at is we're approaching this. This is part of the reason that we had some of the language last time around be incorporated about addressing that it's to repair and not modify. We do know that there is a lot of stuff that is very important out there that can be very dangerous if not properly taken care of. And what we're making sure is that we put together a bill addressing those in the right way. I've been very open to anyone that has ideas how to put in better language on it to address that issue out there. At the same time, I'm also very concerned because so often I've been hearing from farmers, while we've heard that there are some farm dealers that are doing some good things out there, not all farm manufacturers are doing that same thing. And this is where a big concern of mine has been. As we start hitting into this off-road area, we're also hitting our farmers and our farm equipment. And so I want to be very careful as we're doing that, that I'm not jeopardizing what we're trying to do in this bill by making sure that we're protecting our farmers as they go forward to make sure that they can get the parts, the stuff they need on a timely basis when they've got some of the manufacturers that are out there that don't do things as well as other manufacturers. And that's what it's trying to get to is, from what I hear from some of the people who have presented today, they probably already meet what's outlined in here and are doing those things. What we're trying to do is address the folks that are not doing that. And that's where we got into some of the pricing, is people were concerned about the pricing, and that is one of the issues that we did work on this past time around and did difference in there, because the dealers were expressing concerns in there. And so we were hoping that the language that we have there was addressing that concern, so that we weren't in a situation where people would say, oh, I can get it here cheaper and to heck with the dealers, even though the dealers provide things. And this was based on testimony I was hearing from the deer dealers the last time around. So this is a bill that we'll continue to work on. If people have ideas and suggestions how to make it better, I'm always willing to take that in and incorporate it as we go forward.
Representative Niska.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Fisher. I appreciate that. I do think this probably strikes the balance in the wrong place in terms of making sure that that repairs are done by someone who's qualified to do them. I did have some other questions about the remedies provision, subdivision 4, top of page 5, that I'm a little confused by the by some aspects of that language and had a couple questions about that. So subdivision 4 is entitled enforcement by the Attorney General, but the first sentence is a violation of this section is an unlawful practice under section 325D.44, which is part of the Uniform Deceptive Trade Practices Act. And when I look at that that statutory provision, I don't see any reference to enforcement by the Attorney General of the Uniform Deceptive Trade Practices Act, and it's not referenced in 8.31, which is where I would have thought a reference to this would be if it wasn't in the Uniform Deceptive Trade Practices Act itself. So maybe this is a question for House Research, or maybe you know the answer to this, Representative Fisher, but is 325D.44 cross-referenced somewhere to some enforcement authority of the Attorney General?
Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am not familiar with that part of the law right there. I do know that the reason we're spelling it out here is to make it clear is that if something is wrong here, we have got someone to enforce it, and that's what the problem is in some of these other areas of the country where they've tried to do this. They haven't had a way to enforce the mechanism or provision for that, and as a result, it's fallen apart. And this is why we wanted to call out the reference here, and I felt that this would be helping address it, but I would be willing to defer if staff has more clarity on it.
I think Ms. Pompeo has some thoughts here. Ms. Pompeo.
Chair and members, so there are remedies outside of the Attorney General's purview that cover a violation of 325D.44. Another cross-reference is 325D.45, and that allows you injunctive relief, costs and attorney's fees, and that the remedies are cumulative. So I think this cross-reference is not to the Attorney General. The next sentence is what brings in the Attorney General.
Representative Niska?
Okay, and thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Fisher. So that is where I was going, actually, with this. So 325D.45, which is a private right of action for the Uniform Deceptive Trade Practices Act, is a private right of action by plaintiffs. And so I just wanted to make clear, so the intent, even though this subdivision is entitled enforcement by the Attorney General, it is creating a private right of action with attorney's fees under the Uniform Deceptive Trade Practices Act. Is that the intent of the bill?
Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Stevenson, and also thank you, Representative Niska. Yes, it's being able to make sure that we have that option out there. I think that we need a multiple prong approach if something has happened, and that's the intent here, is to allow for that. And part of the reason I want to make sure that the Attorney General is wrapped in there is sometimes when you're trying to take a private right of action, if you're dealing with something very small, most people aren't going to want to invest their time in it. Plus, most aren't going to know how to navigate the system. And we want to be able to provide that resource so that if you've got a lot of people that are small being impacted, whether it's a lot of small phones or printers or that kind of thing, it's easier for the Attorney General to be able to come in and take care of representing all those people. At the same time, if it's something larger, you still have that right for a private action to be able to take that on yourself.
So I believe the motion on the table is to re-refer to judiciary.
Yeah.
And so I think one suggestion might be that you could omit those three words by Attorney General in the title there on subdivision 4. Of course, the second sentence, as Ms. Pompeo indicates the Attorney General would enforce the first sentence, as Representative Niska is saying, is a little bit broader. So then it would just be enforcement, and it would be by both the private parties and the thing. But you could just an idea, and I'm sure Representative Niska, who's on, I'll just give you a heads up. Representative Niska is on the Judiciary Committee, and he asked questions there,
I'm
too.
Expecting I'll probably get some of these same questions
you
again
might,
as we're going to the next one.
Representative Niska.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I appreciate you also helping transition into my next question, which is about the next sentence there in enforcement by the Attorney General, which is, I guess, is also a little unclear to me, and maybe we can work on clarifying that before or in the Judiciary Committee hearing. So that the next sentence simply says, all remedies, penalties, and authority granted to the Attorney General under Chapter 8 are available to the Attorney General to enforce this section. And Chapter 8 is the entire chapter about the Attorney General's office. It includes provisions about criminal prosecution. It includes provisions about the Attorney General giving opinions. It includes provisions about the Attorney General representing state agencies. So there's a lot of stuff in Chapter 8 that doesn't seem like it would be very applicable to this. I referenced earlier Section 8.31, which would seem like the natural place for this provision to go into, but this doesn't specifically reference 8.31. As I mentioned earlier, the Uniform Deceptive Trade Practices Act isn't also referenced among the many statutory provisions referenced in 8.31. So I guess I'm curious whether this is really intended to reference specifically Section 8.31 or something else in Chapter 8 that I'm not thinking about.
Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Chair Stevenson. Representative Niska, I appreciate the opportunity and the comments here. I will definitely take that in and take a look at as that would be a more appropriate way to deal with that. And I appreciate getting some of this before we get to the Committee of Jurisdiction on this so I can start getting some of these things addressed. So thank you for raising it.
Representative Niska.
Sure. Thank you, Chair Stevenson. And Representative Fisher, we can continue this, and I'm sure we will on the Judiciary Committee. I would suggest my personal opinion on whether the way that this enforcement provision is written is that 8.31 is probably the more natural place for both the enforcement by the Attorney General and the private right of action than the Uniform Deceptive Trade Practices Act. That 324D.44 is much more dealing with sort of one-off individual transactions and representations made in individual transactions. And this bill is really about sort of the policy of a manufacturer or an equipment provider, whether they make tools and equipment available at all or whether they're doing it under fair and reasonable terms. And I think that's much more of a Attorney General type of action, either by the Attorney General's office itself or done by someone stepping into the private right of action under the Attorney General's statute than the Deceptive Trade Practices Act. And let me kind of just very specifically explain the concern I have with the way that the Deceptive Trade Practices Act provision 325D.44 and 325D.45 would work, which is if the tools, documentation tools and equipment are made available, you could have potentially 100 lawsuits in different district courts across the state about whether the terms are fair and reasonable, and you might end up with conflicting decisions in those different cases if they're all just treated as individual private causes of action under 325D.45. And so I would suggest that this would work a lot better if it was just all channeled through Section 8.31 through the Attorney General's office, through the Attorney General right of action itself, and then any private right of action would have to meet the standards of 8.31, which includes that it's for a public benefit and things like that. So that would be my suggestion. We can continue that discussion in the Judiciary Committee. Thank you.
Mr. Representative Fisher, if you wanted to
Just thank you for the input and thought. Not being a legal person here, it's something that I appreciate the advice, and we'll work with others to take a look at how we can address it in a better way. Thank you.
I'd be glad that you're not infected with the legal disease. any further discussion to the bill? Representative O'Driscoll. Oh, Representative, you want to go?
Yeah, well, please, I'll wrap.
Yeah, Representative Katisa Wajon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to say a quick shout out to Mr. Blacksell of Vibrant Technologies, headquartered in my district. You mentioned both Eden Prairie and Harry Potter in your two-minute time, and that was very impressive, and I appreciate both of those things. I think it sounds like we all kind of have the same goal here, you know, in making sure that these repairs are done correctly. And it seems to me that, you know, actually to Representative Perryman's point, if, you know, they're getting people who bring in phones that are all jacked up on the inside, it seems like we can potentially avoid that secondary trip if this information is available to everybody. So, I mean, they're right now they don't have necessarily the access, and independent repair shops don't have the access to the information that would allow them to repair these things, also individuals secondary. But if you're going to an independent repair shop already, if they had the access and all the information, it's a one-stop thing. You don't have to necessarily go to another business. And it just seems like that would kind of help with the concern of things not being done properly. So right now, to the extent that it's already been being done and maybe not done to the same degree that some of the manufacturers have concerns about, I think seems like we can maybe move together in that direction. And I just wanted to put in my two cents for that.
Wonderful. Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question for TechNet.
Mr. Deere still here? Come forward. Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I think you're the one that mentioned that you're representing the, did you say the 100 most innovative companies on the planet? Was that correct?
That's right.
Okay. I imagine there's some that may dispute you on that. But,
you know, our preamble is much, our preamble is much longer, so I try to concise it with that. Yeah, sorry.
Mr. Chair, I don't believe we're the first state to look at this and even now to pass a law like this. Is that correct?
That is correct, yes. New York, I think it was alluded to earlier in the testimony, recently did pass repair law, but it has been, I mean, I've, you know, had the privilege of working on this issue for a while, and it's been debated and defeated in probably half the states in the country.
Well, I would say, I know there's many other states that are looking at this, and for all the reasons that I think this is a time that's, this is an idea whose time has come, and I would just encourage you to approach this and approach our bill author with that view that I'm sure he's willing to listen and talk to you, but this is an idea whose time has come, and I encourage you to work with us in that fashion. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative O'Driscoll.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Perryman, I want to thank you. You have got probably the most unique insight on this topic compared to anybody else on this committee, as you have taken the time to go through and work with the manufacturers, get your folks certified, so that as members of the consuming public walk through the doors of your proprietorship, that they know what they're getting. And short of sounding like a commercial, she does have a branch in my district as well, but I digress. So to the bill author, and I want to pursue the last question that Representative Kraft talked about, and I want to put it in a broader context, Representative Fisher. How many states have passed as comprehensive of a no-holds-barred, if I could use that term, right to repair in the nation, and how is that going for those particular states that may have passed as broad of scope as we're proposing here today?
Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Driscoll, ours is more encompassing. We still have the farm and the off-road in ours versus everybody else. So that's where I'll put it right there. Yes, we are a little bit more out there, and part of it is I want to make sure that we're taking care of our farmers.
Representative Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Fisher, I think that when we dip our toe in the water on some of these kinds of topics, narrowing the scope, getting it right, and then expanding it instead of just throwing the whole universe and the net out there and hoping that we can bring fish into the boat, if you will, on this is sometimes a little bit more prudent and a little bit wiser. Some things that I want to share with the committee that I heard today from the testifiers, and I'm just wondering if others have heard the same things that I did. Three of the testifiers in the beginning said, and I quote, "It takes 2 weeks for a tech to come out," end quote. Quote, "Finding a tech to come out," end quote. Is it that we don't have enough people being able to have access to this proprietary information? Or is this just symptomatic, again, of the worker shortage that we're experiencing? And going back to something this committee talked about earlier in the week that I brought up, the shortage of persons getting into the trades industry. Representative Fisher.
Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Chair Stevenson and Representative Driscoll. I don't see it as being part of the workforce shortage, as this is a problem that's existed for a number of years. And so often you have situations where there are people, and we were hearing it about Representative Catizo Attune and referenced it when taking a look at a cell phone. Somebody takes it one place, and they aren't able to get the parts out there. What I'm hearing, people are trying to find the issues out there and trying to solve it, and they're going to YouTube and those things because they aren't able to get the information from the manufacturers. So if it was more easily available, the information to start with, that would solve the problems of somebody not doing right to start with. The other part of the issue comes in is there are many people out there who are very capable on doing some of the very simple repairs. Example, trying to replace a cell phone battery. I mean, I replace the battery in my car. I replace batteries and many other things that are somewhat kind of complicated. And to be able to make those tools a little bit more available so that we could do those things. So I think when you raise the workforce issue, there is a part that is workforce, but the larger, bigger issue is that we don't make the information and the parts available enough for those that could do it to be able to do it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Fisher, to your comment about the cell phones and being able to change your batteries, my understanding is that Apple allows folks the ability to be able to get the tools, and they've changed manufactured the phones to be able to try to compromise and to be able to achieve that goal. I was wondering if the person from TechCheck is still here, and if they could come back and do have a question.
TechNet, Mr. Deers?
Excuse me. Yes.
Mr. Deers, you would be willing to come down one more time?
Sorry, the third time's a trifecta.
Yeah, there we go. We like trifectas around here. Representative O'Driscoll.
I'm keenly aware of that, Mr. Chair. Keenly aware of that. The term that Vice Chair Catizo Attune used was, someone brings their phone, it's all jacked up. I'm not familiar with that technical term.
Not a technical
term. But it might be a statutory definition. I'm not 100% sure, but I digress. The question I have for you is, can you explain to us how the New York law is going, since that is Representative Fisher's suggestion? We have the most comprehensive. They have some experience here. What have you seen?
Mr. Deers.
Yeah, thank you for that question, Representative Driscoll. And I don't have New York, too, by the way. I just want to make that very clear. It's not one of my states I have. But, we did oppose that bill when it was introduced. We urged the veto on that bill as well, too. We were unsuccessful on it. But we think the governor, did address some pretty significant concerns that the bill that passed, the legislature over there, I think she addressed a lot of the concerns that industry has, and I think consumers would have as well, too, as far as, security of the devices, intellectual property, things like that. But, it hasn't, I can't confirm this. I don't even know. I don't have purview to know, but, will there be a court challenge on this? I don't know, right? And it hasn't gone into effect yet, but, I think one of the things that, lawmakers, oftentimes you don't have to have a bill become law to get companies' attention. And that's why I kind of alluded to in my beginning of my testimony. Industry has made a lot of changes voluntarily, and that's both because of scrutiny that, bodies like this have, and I say that in a respectful way, but also from consumers as well.
Representative Rust.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I thank the testifier for his clarification on my question. Representative Fisher, I don't think that there are two opposing sides specifically on this. Everyone wants their devices to be able to be repaired. And the question that I have is, if you are a manufacturer and you have a certain reputation and goodwill with your consumers, is it too much to ask to be able to have the people who service those and provide the repairs to those devices and systems and what have you to follow the protocol that they set forward because of their goodwill and brand image with the consuming public, to try to continue to build goodwill and to repeat business with them versus making it available to everyone where they don't have any control over who's going to have their brand and their image in their hands, what damage that might be done on an individual by individual bad actor player. Again, not all, but again, we always hear about the bad actors. I'm just kind of curious to see if you've taken that into consideration in your creation of the bill today, Representative Fisher.
Before going to Representative Fisher, are you done with Mr. Deers, Representative Driscoll?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Just didn't want to have him come down a fourth time. So thank you, Mr. Deers. Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Chair Stevenson. Thank you, Representative Driscoll. And what I take a look at is that manufacturers work very hard to make sure they have their reputation out there. And there are many of them that are doing the right thing in terms of making sure that the parts and tools and diagnostics are available out there, and that just goes to enhance their reputation and their quality out there. I think where the big problem is that you have some manufacturers out there who are not as ingenuous about it, honest about it, and they're using it more as a way to control things up and down the entire system to make sure that you are only going to get your pieces here. I don't want you going anywhere else. I want to control that market. And that does happen, and that is some of the reasons that we have these problems out there. And this is what we're trying to get to, is it's not just one or the other. And there are, as I mentioned earlier, is there are manufacturers out there who are probably pretty much doing everything that we've already got here, and they're doing a great thing, and it's not harming the reputation. They're doing a great job of working out, doing the work out there. You mentioned Apple, how they replace their batteries. Well, we still have phone companies out there that don't do that, but it's because of this kind of work that's pushing them in that direction, and it would not surprise me if there were companies like Apple, by the time this bill was done, that they're probably already fully compliant with it.
Representative Driscoll?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess my final thoughts and comments, members, and on this bill and to the comment that Representative Fisher brought forward, we clearly see that the market is responding to the wishes of consumers. I'd like to be able to have the phone, and I'd like to be able to repair the battery. I'd like to be able to repair my screen. So the markets are not inelastic to the demands of what consumers want. Clearly, the market's ready to stand up and to respond. They know it's a profit loss issue. They know that it's a customer retention issue. And so I don't know that laws like this necessarily help. With that, businesses could get into involvement with bad actors that they don't choose to get involved with and have to pay the consequences with their image and with folks like Representative Perryman who are asked to, you know, take care of the quote-unquote jacked-up system that's been brought to them. You know, when you own a home and in the state of Minnesota, when you are going to sell that home, you require certain disclosures. Those disclosures are, did you do repairs to the property yourself? Now, your bill doesn't talk about having anything like that to the consumer who's going to be selling that phone or trading that in. Did you do any of that work yourself? Are you certified to do that work? And the reason we do that in real estate is in the way of full disclosure of material facts so that individuals know and are making an informed decision about what they're about to get into in a purchase. I'll grant you that the purchase of a cell phone is a little bit less expensive than the purchase of a home or the purchase of other things. But again, when we're talking about disclosure where homeowners or owners do their own work or have others do it who aren't properly certified or licensed by the manufacturers or in a building process, whatever the case may be, the public does run a risk of getting an inferior product as a result of not managing the process in the integrity of the equipment and home, whatever the case may be. So, members, I think Representative Fisher's got some valid points here, but it's not ready for prime time, in my opinion. I recommend a no vote today.
Thank you, Representative Driscoll. There's no further member seeking recognition, so I will give Representative Fisher the final word.
Thank you, Chair Stevenson, and thank you, committee, for the robust discussion today, and thank you to the testifiers. Representative Niska, thank you for the ideas on the where I'm going to be going next. I appreciate that. This is something that is, this bill has come a long way. The industries have come a long way. But there are still things that we want to make sure that we continue to do to address the concerns out there so that you have the opportunity to repair. We've heard from many folks who are eager to do repairs, things that would help our local schools be able to get the computer parts, et cetera. There is a large area that is still being missed that would end up even helping save taxpayers' dollars down the road by being able to continue to reuse products at cheaper prices instead of having to always buy things brand new. As I started off, I'll finish, is we've got something as complicated as a car that we're able to get repaired. Why can't we make sure we're doing the same thing for computers? Thank you so much for your time, and I ask for your green vote.
Thank you, Representative Fisher. I will renew the motion that House File 1337, as amended, be recommended to be referred to Judiciary Finance and Civil Law Committee. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No. No.
Motion prevails, and House File 1337, as amended, is recommended to be referred to the Judiciary Finance and Civil Law Committee. There's no further items on the agenda. Representative Driscoll.
Hey, guess what? We're at that time of the week again where I get to ask the question. Mr. Chair, any idea what next week looks like for the committee?
We will be hearing bills on both Monday and Wednesday. You and I have been talking about some of those bills, and we will post them in short order.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And with that, the meeting is adjourned.